Here is some Stoke FM news for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. I'm Megan Dooling. The city of Revelstoke is rewriting its zoning bylaw for the first time since 1984. There will be a public information session about this tomorrow, on Wednesday, May 3rd, from 6 till 8 at the community center. Paul Simon is the city's lead planner. Here's our conversation about the importance of the zoning bylaw.
So with this zoning bylaw rewrite, we're going to be re-examining all the permitted uses that you're allowed to undertake in different zones of the city. So this is very important for things like business development. Where are we going as a community and what types of businesses do we need to be able to enable and where should they be enabled? It also will be very important for residential development. I don't think it's any secret that Revelstoke is in a very tough situation when it comes to escalating land values and cost of housing, something that is certainly front and center of the mind for city staff here to figure out what different tools can we implement to help alleviate the issues around housing. And with this zoning bylaw rewrite, we get the opportunity to begin to re-examine different levels of permitted density within different zones. Now, this doesn't mean that all of a sudden someone's going to be able to build a 12-story condo right next to a single detached residence. But what it does mean is that when we have developers coming to the table, there will be a multitude of zones for them to choose from to say what type of development works best in the context of this neighborhood and in a way that will address some of the housing goals.
Can you go into a little bit more detail, like despite those things which we know are so important and top of mind to people, a comprehensive rewrite of the zoning bylaw, it sounds really boring. So like, why should people care?
Yeah, for the planning group, we definitely don't view it as boring. With this zoning bylaw rewrite, for the first time ever in the city's history, we're going to be peeling out all the zones as they currently exist in the zoning bylaw, and we're going to be replacing them with either new or modified zones that are reflective of the needs of the community today. So for anyone in the city that owns property here or is looking to own property in the future, this will impact what you can and cannot do on your property. And as well, it's going to impact for future developers what type of development they have the option to choose from when they're going through things like a rezoning process. So it is very, very important. It sets those on-the-ground rules. And when we start tinkering with those on-the-ground rules, there's a lot of implications for existing property owners. Now, as part of this process, you engage in robust public engagement so that the community is informed and is able to provide feedback so that you don't change the rules in a way that creates a lot of unintended consequences or impacts a lot of existing users within the community. The general essence is we're going to be guided by things like our official community plan and our housing action plan to try and make the zoning bylaw more reflective in terms of the uses you can do and the type of development you can undertake of what the needs and the desires of the community are as a whole.
You spoke at a committee of the whole meeting about Revelstoke short-term rental, about how you are giving an update to council about enforcing the new short-term rental bylaw. And you talked about how the city had to decide what its philosophy on short-term rentals is. Will updating this zoning bylaw help determine the guiding philosophy for stuff like that?
Yeah, short-term rentals are a very tricky subject in this community. And if actually, you see some polarizing issues as a planner, and the short-term rentals are a challenging one to try and meet in the middle on because people are at such opposing ends of the spectrum on it. And so we do anticipate revisiting some of the basic short-term rental regulations as they currently sit in the zoning bylaw as part of this project. However, as we delve into it, we're going to need to make the determination, depending on any scope of changes, if that needs to be done as its own project, because it is such a big issue. And what you're hearing me say in there is, these regulations really can't do everything. And as a community, we need to come together and we need to say, okay, how do we want short-term rentals to be managed in this community, and what do we want them to achieve? Are short-term rentals going to be something that we view as an opportunity for the community to participate in the tourism economy, or do we want to say all of our stock that can go towards long-term rental needs to go towards long-term rental, and we really want to tighten up how many short-term rentals we permit within the community, regardless of who's operating them. So that's a decision where, you know, this is why when we do these projects, we go out to the community, we kind of start out big and say, what are the objectives that you want to see addressed as part of this update? And they give us that those marching orders to say, here's what we want to see achieved, here's the objectives, here's the goals. And then staff are tasked with going and developing the regulatory framework that will ultimately see those goals achieved. So yeah, the short-term rental is something that will be part of this when we review, but whether or not it needs to be pulled out as its own separate project is a bridge that we're going to have to cross when we get there.
Following another question about the housing crisis, Revelstoke right now, as you said, it's no secret there's a shortage of rentals and housing for the workforce right now, and not just service industry, but, you know, RCMP, teachers, highway workers, BC Hydro, all of those people, all of those industries are affected by our housing stock right now. How does rewriting and updating this zoning bylaw apply to increasing development for workforce housing?
Certainly. One of the big things that we can do through zoning regulations is you can provide some incentives to try and get the development form that is in the community interest. So an example is for workforce housing, if you have reduced parking regulations for that type of development, then it might be something that becomes more feasible for the developer to pursue. Another one is increasing density. So right now, when you look at our medium and high density residential zones, as they're currently written in the zoning bylaw, they're quite low in terms of what their baseline densities allow. And what happens is when a developer comes to the table and they're accounting for the construction costs in Revelstoke, as well as the cost of land in Revelstoke, and when they're hampered by this low density requirement that is imposed in these zones, there's really not a lot of room to provide for the type of housing that is in need of the community. And when staff are trying to work with the development community to say, what is the maximum we can achieve from an affordability perspective with this development, a lot of comments that we usually get is, well, we're struggling to make a profit, or we're struggling to make this project financially feasible because we're so restricted by a low density requirement that's coupled with a high parking requirement. So you're using a lot of the land to actually provide for parking. So that's part of the challenge that we're going to have to address with this zoning bylaw update, is what is that right threshold? So one thing that the market can do is actually respond to, by playing within the rules, respond to the needs of the community from a housing perspective. Now, when it gets to non-market housing, that's where things certainly start to get a little bit more complicated. Revelstoke is going to have to identify what path forward we think is most appropriate. And the zoning bylaw can provide some tools. Density bonusing is really the main legislative tool that we get, where we can say to a developer, you're entitled to X amount of density. If you want to go higher in density, you can, but you need to provide 15% of the units or 25% of the units as affordable housing. We'll enter into a housing agreement with the municipality and the developer that will stipulate the conditions that need to be met to provide that affordable housing. But that's really the main tool we get through the zoning bylaw. But that said, the city is working with Revelstoke Community Housing Society, and we are exploring other options that are available to us that would be outside of a zoning bylaw update to try and see how we can increase the supply of non-market housing so that we have accommodation for the community into the future.
I'm wondering, the last time that this bylaw was comprehensively rewritten, it's from 1984, so 38 years ago. Mm-hmm. And obviously the city has changed so much since then. And when you're looking at, like you were saying, peeling back the layers of the zones, how do you worry about future changes and not going too far to make it easy to develop for workforce housing? Like, how do you think about limits on what you're doing and how the city might evolve and change in that?
So we do have to make sure that we're weighing an appropriate balance of how do you incorporate flexibility into the development approval process to get things built faster to respond to the needs of the community, while making sure that we're not allowing development to occur in a way that is at the detriment of the long-term benefit of the community, and that we're not missing out on opportunities to provide for community amenities through things like affordable housing. So So it's definitely a balancing act that we have to strike the right balance for. But in my view, the key thing, and this is what's so critically important for the city, is when you have the longevity in staff and you have good employee retention here, then you can make sure that you're evaluating and re-examining these bylaws, you know, every year, every 5 years, comprehensively, so that we can look at the community indicators and say, okay, what is the data telling us about the needs of the community? And then reflect on the bylaws as they've been adopted to say, is it achieving its desired outcome? And if not, what changes need to be made? And how do you go through the public process to get the community involved to not only help provide insight to answer those questions, but also provide insight on where do we want to go as a community and how can we amend bylaws to reflect that? So it's really a constant monitoring and evaluation process that needs to occur.
We've talked about the short-term rental kind of polarization and how the city needs a guiding philosophy, and this might be a chance, you might pull it out separately, but that's just one example of how the public could weigh into how they want the city to look. And you mentioned with business and subdividing too. I'm just wondering, how important is it to have input from the public?
It's critically important, because one of the biggest things, in my view, that is the job of a planning department is to help inform and provide education to the community about the existing legal and legislative framework that we are operating within and where the avenues are for the community to provide input and how that input can be used and embedded into the process. And when we did the official community plan, I think that the feedback we received from the community was outstanding, and so much of it made its way into the final official community plan. And, you know, by way of policy and action items. So the community really did have such a big part in actually drafting the final contents of that plan. And when you talk with the community members that were involved in it, they were very pleased with the outcome. And one of the most important pieces of feedback we got from them on that process was when we received feedback from the community and they had an idea about how we could address a certain challenge within the community, and we responded and said, unfortunately, we can't go this route because of these reasons, and under this legislation, we're not allowed to do that. However, here's an alternative, or here's a way that we can word the policy where it might not be a requirement, but it reflects the desire of the community. So it starts to become a little bit like an advocacy policy. So if a developer comes to the table and, you know, they want to do something that the community has indicated they don't support, but we don't have the legislative backing to do so, then we could say, you know, we can't force you to do this. However, this is a strong preference of the community, and this is the way that planners can start advocating on behalf of the community. And a really good tangible example of that is through the OCP process, you know, we heard from the community, no big box stores downtown. We don't want to see a big franchise come in downtown. Now, that's a challenging thing to do from a zoning perspective, because with zoning, you can't regulate the user. You can only regulate the use. So you would say restaurants are permitted downtown. Maybe you say no drive-through restaurants are permitted downtown, but restaurants are generally permitted. And what happens if we have a McDonald's that wants to come and open downtown? Well, technically, it's very challenging to outright say no, because it's a restaurant just like any other restaurant we have in downtown. However, when we have policies that are advocating for the community, it says, you know, strongly encourage franchise development in our highway commercial area, staff can then point to those policies and start to advocate on behalf of the community to say, you know, we understand your legal team says we can't say no, but this is what the community has said they want, and we want you to be, you know, a good community steward with your development here. So for the community to come out, be engaged, be open in the process, and be receptive to feedback that staff are saying, with the understanding that staff's intent is to provide the best information possible to the public so that the public can participate as in the best way possible in the process, given the legal and legislative box that we're working within. That's really what we want the public to understand when they come out and they engage in these types of projects with us.
Those are all my questions. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you want people to know about this?
Just for the community to check out Talk Revelstoke, to email zoningbylaw@revelstoke.ca if they have any questions, and to be engaged in the project. We have, one of the reasons why this project does have a more prolonged timeline, you know, aside from the technical complexity associated with accomplishing what we're proposing to accomplish here, it is because we've built in a lot of extra time for community engagement. So Talk Revelstoke has a survey right now that's open until May 15th. We encourage everyone to go and participate and fill it out. It'll take you no more than 5 minutes. We are doing an open house on Wednesday, May 3rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Revelstoke Community Center in the MP3 room. We're going to do a short presentation shortly after 6 p.m. And then we're going to open it up to a Q&A from the public, make sure that they can get their questions answered about the project. The intent is really to inform the community that this project is happening. And once we hit key milestones in the project, we're going to be opening up the doors for some substantial community engagement through what we're calling coffee chats. So we're going to be looking to have the public come in kind of in groups and discuss the changes with staff so that they can get a better understanding and they can provide feedback on those changes. So we have lots of avenues for community engagement, and you'll see them all listed on Talk Revelstoke. So we encourage everyone to go take a look. And if you have any questions, do not hesitate to reach out, and one of us will be happy to chat with you.
Paul Simon is the lead planner for the city of Revelstoke. There will be a public information session tomorrow about the zoning bylaw rewrite. It's from 6 till 8 at the community center. Reporting for Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling.